24 is the atomic number for the chemical chromium. 24 is the number of carats in 100% pure gold. There are actually 24 letters in the Greek alphabet. The standard for cinema film is 24 frames per second. The late Kobe Bryant proudly wore number 24. And this is the 24th episode of the Godfathers of Podcasting, broadcasting live on godfathersofpodcasting.com and on Facebook. Archives of this show are available on all your favorite podcast providers. Be sure to subscribe to our feed on whichever platform you get your podcasts. This episode is brought to you by MakeGoodFood.ca. Go to MakeGoodFood.ca and stop worrying about what you're going to eat next week. Order healthy, easy, prepared meals that taste delicious. Raw ingredients for recipes you choose delivered fresh to your door. Go to MakeGoodFood.ca and enter promo code GOP45 to get $45 off each of your first two offers. And when you're on our website, GodfathersOfPodcasting.com, check out our merchandise in our online store. Amazing quality and selection like this. And you can get yours today. Hello, everyone. My name is Donnie Da Silva, and I am joined, as always, by two of the most talented, intelligent, charismatic people I know. And prior to the show, they informed me that they are the Derek Wheeler and Joey Jeremiah to my Snake Simpson. It is Notorious T.I.D. Chris Tidwell and my bro, Danny O.
Yo, let's see if we can keep this game going. 24 hours in a day. Go, Tid.
24 wheels on a bus. I don't even know where you're going with this.
24 hours in a day, 24 beers in a box. The guy had all these 24 analogies. I just figured we play that game again, and it seems like I won.
Oh, okay.
What else has 24 in it?
Your ma?
Well, this talk about his mama.
I didn't say his. Whoa, where are you going, Donnie?
I don't know. My camera's doing wacky things. What up?
Right? Even it doesn't like the way you look.
I know, right? Oof. Hey, guys, how are you?
What's going on?
We're doing good, man. We're doing
good.
How are you doing?
It's been a week. The response to episode 23 with our friend Ed the Sock was tremendous. If anyone out there missed that episode, it is available on godfathersofpodcasting.com. And as I said, all your favorite podcast providers, please go check it out. Guys, what have you been up to over the last 7 days?
Well, video.
Yeah. Dan?
That was very Road Warrior.
What have you been up right to there for the last 7 days, bruh?
Brand new music video coming. So I'm excited about that because I haven't been able to shoot anything all through COVID. So
I was hoping you were going to do it like the new Drake video and let me lip sync the whole video.
Yeah, you know, that would be a dope idea.
Yeah, a year ago.
So yeah, there's that, and just writing, recording new music is on the way, man. So, you know, I'll let you know when it's ready to go, but I've been busy. I've been good. What about you?
You've been spending more time in the studio and stuff like that over the past week?
A couple of new tracks have been recorded. Yeah.
Is that got anything to do with the fact that there's less time maybe watching basketball games?
Oh man, you're still on that, man.
It's going to happen all day.
That's it. Go Heat, man.
Listen, the NBA. Go Heat.
And anybody playing the Eagles, I'm your fan. I don't care who you are.
Hey, NBA, you don't even know what football is.
The NBA booked a really good finish of Lakers versus Celtics. Congratulations.
Going old school, yeah.
No, they're working a good angle. The storyline is set. Good for them. That's okay. Referees are corrupt as shit. Moving on.
Yeah.
Wow. Thanks, Donald.
Trump. Fake refs. Speaking of which, Dan, you had some Trump stuff on your mind this week, right?
Yeah, man.
Bro, can I get to let me go on a little spiel here, bro.
Since we're talking 24s.
A little one, I promise.
Little spiel. How about I put a 24-second shot clock on you?
See, you could have used that in the game earlier. You ruined it.
You never came to me. You only went to Tid, and then you gave up on the game. Up.
24. That's where you fucked up. Seriously, though, if you are still at this point a Trump supporter,
and there are many of them,
and there's millions. You are purposely, and I mean, like, this is no longer a matter of politics. I really truly believe that it's not a politic thing anymore. You're just a fucking idiot. I'm calling all 50, 60 million of you. All of y'all are fucking idiots. The guy said I don't think science knows, actually. Science is wrong. So there's literally nothing. Mm-hmm. There's literally nothing you can tell this man that's based on facts, scientific evidence, anything legitimate, as long as it doesn't work for him and his political stance or what he believes in, he will state it and the rest of y'all will follow him. You won't question him. Okay. It's like we're talking about our teams here, right? If we have a player on our team not play well, we call that player out, or the coaching, or in Donnie's case, you might look to the refs. That's what Donald Trump does. It's always someone else's fault, never the fault. So you, as a supporter, you can't, at least in this particular instance, maybe everything else you want to side because you're racist and you like when he says racist shit, or you're anti-mask, so you like when he says that shit. But when he says this shit, that he doesn't believe in science and there's no climate change and he has scientists telling him we want to work with you to save the country, and he's still not about it, and you still don't call him out on some fuckery, you're fucking stupid. And you're going to have a hand in killing more people in your country.
That was the shot clock. Sorry, Dan.
Perfect. I hit the buzzer. Right.
Let me ask you a very simple question as a follow-up to
Kawhi
all
four
of,
bouncer.
Right?
Go ahead, Ted. All of this.
Do you think there is any coincidence that most of these people, like I would probably wager a bet that it would be north of 90% are all the people that follow him are also very quote religious.
Yeah, for some reason.
Because for years and years, there's always been the argument between what? Religion and science.
Right.
Where science has facts and numbers and things to prove it. And all y'all got is stories.
Yeah, and people want to pray it away. Pray away COVID, pray away to wildfires, pray away to violence or whatever.
I get there's a time for both things in this world. I'm not trying to shit on people who have faith. Don't get me wrong.
Odell Beckham wants that.
I think that all of the gods out there, I want to be cool with all of them because I don't know how this is going to end. You know what I'm saying?
But the thing is, Trump himself ain't down with God.
He just doesn't know how to hold a Bible. Come on, don't, you know.
Even that. How do you hold this? He doesn't know what a book is.
Motherfucker, you'd think he'd spend that much time in motel rooms with hookers that, you know, he would know how to hold a Bible. The Gideon's been in every single one of them motel rooms as well.
You held that right side up, though, Don. You're still doing it.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
You're fucking up the fuck up.
Yeah. No.
There you go.
Even better. Put it in front. Over to the left. No, the other left. Keep going. Keep that. It's perfect. Right there. So, as I was saying.
Well done.
I don't know that joke.
There's a whole lot of like they fall because they have the same kind of background that we are all going to be taken care of by some kind of higher power in this. Unfortunately, that's just not the case. That is just not the case. We're talking about science here, folks. Like here's another question. Do you think Donald Trump's science is better than Steiner's math?
Scott Steiner?
Yeah.
Oh.
Do you think Scott Steiner's math?
That's an old reference. I like
is
it though.
Yeah,
than Donald Trump's science. That's the question I got for everybody out there right now.
Well, you got two guys in the ring plus one referee equals a lot of fuckery.
Climate change. Science don't know about that.
Well, here's
24 reasons.
Here's the thing I want to quickly just branch off of what you're saying, Tit. You're bringing the evangelicals or Christians or whatever into it. He doesn't stand for anything that they stand for. And furthermore, I'm going to go back to something that I've said so many times on this show. If you automatically make a decision based on your political allegiances, you're an idiot. Because if you are a Christian and you can't get behind the concept of racial equality, you don't fucking know what Christianity is. You don't have a clue about this Jesus guy who's supposed to be down with. You have no idea.
One of my favorite memes that I've seen recently is directed at some of the people that complain about, you know, the victims of police violence.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, They were criminals. They should have just obeyed the law and nothing would have happened. And there's a meme of Christ on the cross.
Right.
And people pointing, saying he should have obeyed the law.
Right. Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, let's take it there.
Well. What? He was tried for his crimes against the pending republic.
For fuck's sakes, guys. We're still talking about, like, it might as well be Peter fucking Pan.
Oh. Okay, I'm not gonna. Hey, you just said you want to stay good with all the gods.
Yeah.
So you better watch yourself.
All of them. So let's not say that it's just one. What happens to the rest of them then, man?
Quickly, since we're talking about it, we only have about a minute to sort of take thoughts on this. Thoughts on the settlement today that was announced. Breonna Taylor's family cashing in with a major settlement from the city down in Louisville, right? Coming across with, what was the final number? Was it 12 million?
12 million.
Yeah.
I don't know how we do this in a minute, because to be honest, there's a lot to talk about here. But what I will say is that obviously money doesn't bring Breonna back. So that is not, as far as what I've heard, the end of this story. There's still supposed to be a
definitely not the end of
criminal charges.
No.
Okay.
No.
Regardless, there's supposed to be a pursuit of criminal charges. But secondly, if they're going to award the family any money, let alone $12 million, is that not an obvious admittance of wrongdoing? So why has there been no arrests? Why provide the family with a settlement if no one did anything wrong?
The fact that the cop who shot Breonna Taylor was terminated is an admission of wrongdoing.
There you go.
The fact that he's still walking around free is very confusing. Sorry, Tid. I feel like you were about to say something.
I was just going to say, is it really an admission, or is it just kind of like they feel like they're throwing you a bone or
like
something.
Shut the fuck up, I mean? Money.
Right. Oh,
it's
you mean
bit,
like the 12 million?
Shut the fuck
like,
up,
it,
money.
It seems to be like we are talking about an agency that is on record as being not the most upstanding agency, and now we're talking about throwing money at a situation to try to make it go away, because in their eyes, I'm sure they think if we can make the family be quiet, then eventually it'll just die down and become another story. What they don't understand is that we live in a different fucking world right now, and the story doesn't go away until the people out there that have a voice say it goes away. And this one is not going away
because
money was thrown at the situation. This one is not going away until there's justice. Yes, it is a good thing that the family can now, like, you know, maybe rest a little easier. Right. It's a good thing that they have been acknowledged in the situation, but there is still a problem that needs to be cured. And that problem is 100%. Justice.
Absolutely.
Nobody. What they're saying is that, listen, what they're saying is that it is OK to do this as long as you throw money at people that are the victims in this situation.
Yeah, totally. It's a pure Ted DiBiase move, man. They think everybody's got a price. And $12 million is all that's required to shut y'all up. And it'll be very interesting to see what does happen next, especially with respect to the steps the family takes in the criminal court case. Yep. Because I can't imagine what it could possibly feel like to lose a family member so tragically, be awarded that kind of money. How do you even spend it or utilize it in a way that's almost like conscience free, like you said, helps to make life easier. But if they're not,
there's no such
maybe
thing.
Using. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't bring her back. So unless that money is, and I'm not making any judgment calls on the family, but I'm just saying, like, hopefully this is only a step towards bringing about the justice that they deserve. And maybe that money will help for that to happen in whatever way they see fit to, like, you know, make this money happen.
Is money. It's not yours to begin with. It's not yours to begin with. They've just thrown you a whole lot of, hey, get comfortable. That's
a lot of that.
They need to hire the right lawyers is what they need.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. A lot of that $12 million is going to go towards proper funeral provisions for Breonna Taylor. Yeah. And a lot of it is going to go towards lawyering the fuck up and making sure yes. that this son of a bitch spends the rest of his natural life in prison.
Yeah, let's man, hope. That's what it's got to be.
Let's hope. Moving on, a couple of other stories I want to get to before our next guest joins us. Dan, I believe it was on episode 22 when we talked about the passing of Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah.
And you asked me a question, what are they going to do with Black Panther 2 and what's the plan going to be? And at the time I said, I don't know. I don't even want to think about it. I told you what my theory was. We are hearing now from many of the big independent cinema news sites, the movie Dirt Sheets, that Letitia Wright, who played Shuri in the Black Panther series, as well as in the Avengers movies, she is going to be anointed as the new Black Panther. The storyline that they're apparently going to go with is that Chadwick's character, T'Challa, was killed sometime between the end of Endgame and the beginning of the new Black Panther movie. And Shuri steps up to ascend to the throne and becomes the new Black Panther.
Does Black Panther get killed in the comic book series?
Honestly, my comic nerdetry isn't that high.
Yeah, we need to talk matter to anymore about though. That. Well, here's why
it doesn't matter.
You know what I mean? Because it's all become just an adaptation.
Oh, hold up. This is why I asked the question. This is actually
well, hold on. Someone in our live chat room right now, Google it for us and find out, in the comic book canon, did T'Challa actually die before Shuri became Black Panther? Someone Google it and look it up for us, please. Because post it in the chat room. Go
as
ahead,
far as I know, Shuri does in the comic books take on that role.
Yes.
But the reason I ask about the T'Challa character is because, and I'm sure you guys know this, this character, this superhero, was such a huge, huge symbol of power and strength and simply being a superhero to young Black kids all over the world, especially young Black boys, many of which I know who are sons of some of my best friends, who they have the t-shirts, the outfits, the posters, the action figures. Imagine going through, you know, your whole life, you get Superman and Batman and Spider-Man and everybody's white who's a superhero. And then you get Black Panther really get some real love in the cinema, and the Marvel Studios are taking this character to a level where it's never been. And then the actual actor passes away. And I've been watching, by the way, some Chadwick Boseman films recently, which I might touch on later. Fantastic. And I'm actually sort of ashamed I didn't see them prior to his passing. That being said, Chadwick sadly is gone in real life. But if T'Challa exists in the comic book series, I think, even though I did say on that episode, Donnie, that I'm not one that is in favor of replacing Chadwick Boseman, the storyline, though, I would love to see whatever you want to come up with that maybe does fall in line with the comic books, not have T'Challa in the story, but not have his character dead.
So we have a couple of answers.
That would mean a lot to a lot of people in ways I don't know if you guys can understand.
We have a couple of answers here. One answer comes in the live chat room, says Black Panther has died before. Someone else sent me a private message that says pretty much every superhero in some comic book continuity has died at some point and then either been brought back to life, or that continuity just ended and then a new one began. That's the thing with comic books, right? There's so many different storylines from different writers revolving around the same characters.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Spider-Man has different origin stories, right?
Yep. Okay. They call that getting vived.
Reimagining.
Vived. They got vived.
So
the segue to something else happening recently. Yeah.
Right. Thank you.
The thing I'm
Donnie
seeing here,
picking up on it.
I'm just trying
I think you
to
wishes
finish
to finish his thought.
No,
I'm just finishing the point. Black Panther has died in Marvel canon previously. Yeah. And it looks like that's the direction.
But has he also been resurrected in Marvel canon, to your point?
Every like nobody stays dead. That's the thing in Marvel.
Okay. So right now, I don't know whether. Right now, is he dead in the comic book world?
I don't know.
Okay.
I got time to read comics? I ain't 12.
Well, you know what has been revived is the you like that? The love around the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, because it's celebrating its 30th anniversary.
In West Philadelphia, born and raised on the playgrounds where I spend most of my days chilling out, maxing, relaxing
all cooling and shooting some b-ball outside of the school when a couple of guys who were up to no good
started making trouble in my neighborhood.
I got one little fight. My mom's got scared. She said, "You're moving with your auntie and uncle in Bel-Air. When are you coming in, Ted?"
She should have said, "Shut the fuck up. Let's get on with the show."
Yo, how crazy is it that they had a 30th anniversary get together and both Aunt Vivs were there? And if anybody knows Fresh Prince of Bel-Air lore,
there was no fighting.
Yo, they seem like they've cooled out. The original Aunt Viv left on some seriously heated terms. Yeah. And she's taken to social media in recent years to trash Will Smith every chance she gets. And somehow, some way, they've made amends. And I'd love to know more about that story if anybody else out there, if you guys know about how that actually came to be.
Was Kingdom James there playing the role of Uncle Phil?
Sorry?
Was Kingdom James there playing the role of Uncle Phil?
Man, he could, I guess.
I'm saying. Between Uncle Phil and Neil deGrasse,
James Avery,
between James Avery and Neil deGrasse Tyson, I think Kingdom James has never been in the same room with either one of them, and I have my suspicions.
Wow,
just saying.
They all look alike, eh, Don?
No, but in the case of Neil deGrasse Tyson, Neil deGrasse Tyson and Anthony Kingdom James sound alike, like to a creepy level.
No, they don't. One is Anthony James.
Not their names.
Jesus, man. You imbecile.
The vocal tonality that they are projecting. Their dulcet tones.
Gotta be specific. Just say the way they speak, honky. Just say the way they speak.
Thank you, Redman.
Cracker ass cracker.
Wow.
Much love, much love. Enough of this chicanery, because our featured guest of the week has just arrived, and I think we should get to him before this thing goes completely off the rails.
Yeah, it's
ladies and gentlemen, this week's guest hails from Toronto, Ontario, and is an iconic name in Canadian television as an actor, director, and producer. He's won 4 Geminis and a Canadian Screen Actors Award. You know him best, of course, from his roles on Liberty Street, Wind at My Back, Witchblade, The Endless Grind, and as the director of Holly Hobby. And you may know him he wakes up in the morning feeling shy and lonely. Gee, he's got to go to school. He doesn't think he can make it. Doesn't think he can take it. I wonder what he's going to do. Yes, of course. He's one of the stars of this quaint little summer job he did back in 1987 called Degrassi Junior High, which evolved into Degrassi High, Degrassi The Next Generation, Degrassi The Next Class, available on Netflix, and a bunch of Degrassi minis, including my personal favorite, Degrassi of the Dead. And over the years, we've seen his character, Archie Snake Simpson, experience every possible emotion on screen. He discovered his friend's body after committing suicide. His bandmate drove drunk and killed a toddler. He adjusted to life with his brother after he came out of the closet during the very homophobic 80s. He fell in love, married his on-screen best friend, and he's grown up right before our eyes. Ladies and gentlemen, we are so proud to welcome Michelle Shaughnessy's husband, my second favorite member of the Zit Remedy, and the best looking guy on the show today. This is Stefan Brogren. Hey man, how are you?
Can you guys see me?
Not yet.
Okay.
Oh my God. I'm fixing it. Give me a second.
Start my video.
Okay.
Hey.
Fun fact.
And there's Michelle.
I feel like such an asshole now.
There you go.
Now we know what made him the best looking guy on the show. He brought a heater. This guy brought a heater to make him good looking. What the hell? Right?
You're like an asshole now. It's like, wait, am I not?
No, I've always have been. Oh,
you know, do you have less technical prowess than me? Because that would be pretty bad.
It's not working. So I'm just gonna do the computer sound. Guys, I'm really embarrassed. I thought I could.
Oh, don't worry.
You know, it would be no problem. But Sylvie, how are you guys doing?
We're doing well. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
We were so thrilled a few weeks ago when we had your lovely wife on the show and you were tweeting out to your, tens of thousands of fans, "Hey, everyone, go in and check out Michelle on this show. It's really fun.
Oh, she had a blast also too. It was like, you know, she does pot these every once in a while, and but she didn't enjoy herself as much as she's done this. This was her favorite one by far.
Oh man,
that's awesome. And we're hoping that we can live up to that hype and have a good time here with you tonight.
Also, I have to pass on, I know that you guys gave her a hard time about not having a Instagram account active.
Yeah. But
she's reactivated it.
Oh, nice.
Oh, we know.
Michelle's funny. At Michelle's funny.
And, are we following her, Dan?
We are following her.
All right.
And we've tagged her in those previous posts.
Nice. Awesome. Great. Social media manager on the tip right there.
Got to be good for some.
That's awesome. Stefan, I'm so happy that you joined us. The reaction has been amazing. Right now in our live chat room on Facebook, people are pouring in with the fanboy Degrassi questions, and we may get to those a little bit later
on. That's cool.
I got to tell you, though, when I was a kid watching Degrassi, one thing that I loved about the show / hated about the show is I watched you guys and just thought to myself, I want to be their friend. I want to be in the Zit Remedy. I feel like I'm part of this crew. Like, I even had a nickname. I'm Horsetooth. I was ready to go. Like, I was ready to fit in.
First of all, we needed Horsetooth on that show. We would have been
right.
We had Horsetooth. Yeah.
I thought there was something so charming and so relatable about those shows, that it just made you feel like, oh my God, that looks like my high school. That looks like kids that I'm going to school with. And I like these guys, and I feel like I understand who they are.
I can't tell you how many times people come up to me and they start talking to me because they think we went to school together. We just don't put it together. And they start hitting me up, all these names of their buddies, like, oh man, I saw Al last week. It was great. I'm like, awesome. And then halfway through, they go, oh my God, you're the fucking guy from Degrassi.
Wow.
Yeah. So it is one of those things that at first you're just like kind of pleasantly surprised that they're talking to you as a human being. Because you're right. It's like one of those things, this is the truth, is that we were real kids for the most part, you know.
Right.
We didn't have makeup, we didn't have hair. The clothes that they got for us were at like Value Village, or we brought in our own clothes. And like, we had little milk cartons, and every morning when you were filming, you'd come in and grab your clothes, throw them on, and that's pretty much it. I think we had a powder puff that we all shared, but that was pretty much it. So
definitely pre-COVID conditions there, sharing a powder puff.
Even at the time, I think we were concerned. But it was a situation where we were real kids. I think we looked at it like a summer job.
Yeah.
You know, we were all really excited to be there. And I don't think any of us knew that it was going to be the thing that it turned out to be, which was like amazing. But that's the truth, is that I think a lot of people all through Degrassi, through like right to the next class, which was the Netflix version. I think the most important thing is you want to feel like your viewer knows those kids and wants to be with those kids, whether he likes them or not, you know?
I was just going to say, I'll let you jump in, Dan. I just want to finish my point. When I was watching the show, I always related to you personally because I was the tall kid in my crew. I was the guy that was like, you know, in the background of his high school band. And I kind of just wanted to be with the guys and stuff. Yeah. And I always envisioned myself like in that circle. And the closest I ever got, I have two different sort of like degrees of separation prior to obviously getting to know your lovely wife and now having you here. My two touch points are, I was very closely affiliated with someone who dated Clutch through high school. And my second point of contact was Tid here on the screen. He and I used to work at a nightclub together where Pat, who played Joey Jeremiah, used to come in every now and then. Remember Tid? Tid's like, Joey Jeremiah's drunk again.
Oh, fuck. He was. And you'd always know because it was like, which one's Joey? Look for the hat.
Wait. What club was this?
This was at Whiskey Saigon.
Oh, Whiskey Saigon. Okay.
Hi, that was me. Sorry for anything that I could have possibly done.
That's really, really funny. And you know what? I'm sure Pat had some nights there. I'm pretty sure of it.
He had a good month there. Before that,
Spike, I used to play in a metal band, and so I used to see Spike at like a bunch of shows.
He's like full on metal groupie.
He was dope, man. Like it was, yeah. Like, and here's the thing that I'd always said is like, because I'm not a Canadian, right? I moved up here in I moved up to Canada in 1988. And yeah. So the whole culture and everything like that was kind of completely different. Mm-hmm. I went to a school that was in Las Vegas that was way more attuned to like a, you know, 90210 outdoors. This was our high school, right? And you come up here and you see this show, this Degrassi show that really emulated. This was the difference between Canada and the US, because those two shows were very much similar as fact that they were so iconic for the countries that they were made in. The mm-hmm. difference really being, and you said it yourself, was Canadian kids, you guys and everybody was going out to Value Village and picking up your own stuff. And you were worried about like sharing some powder puff or whatever. These guys were blowing cocaine out their eyeballs down in the States just to try to make some TV show. Like, and that was the difference. That was the pureness of what you guys did in Degrassi. And it made it so much more kitschy and made it so much bigger, I think, in the long run. Right.
Yeah. Don't you agree? I think for, first of all, I don't think we had a choice on how it was going to be made. We're talking about the CBC in a time where, right. You know, this, if you're going to have a cast of, there was like 10 of us at one point that were sort of regular characters on the show. Mm. It wasn't really established to have a cast that size, I think, on a Canadian show to do it at a level, like, let's not kid around. You can't do it on a level of 90210, and it probably has never been done in Canadian television that way. But it is one of those things that you're absolutely right. I think it's a very honest experience. I think 90210 for a lot of it is an honest experience also for a lot of
differently.
People. There's no doubt that that is definitely a, listen, I could watch it and you can relate to it. And then you also have that fantasy aspect of it. With Degrassi, you don't have that fantasy aspect. You're like, yeah, Joey's my neighbor. You know, yeah.
It's like, too real.
It's right. Too real. Honestly, you're like, oh damn. Oh, that's my neighborhood.
Dan, what were you going to say?
Well, that actually is something that I wanted to speak to, the whole realness factor of it, because I think from the actor's perspective, this is the question I wanted to ask you. When you have so many fans coming up to you and actually mistaking you for someone they legitimately went to high school with, there's something to be said about how much they can relate to you as a real person, or what they thought they were doing was relating to Snake like he was a real person. Can you speak to how real it was for you to be in character in a situation where, as Kid was mentioning, you are actually putting out there this realistic, to some degree, view of Canadian high school life?
Well, listen, oh. I always thought, first of all, I when they told me that my character's name was going to be Snake, I thought my character was going to be a badass.
Mm. Or a porn star.
Yeah, or a porn star. Yeah, exactly. So, first of all, I'm from the first episode I've ever done, I'm wearing like leopard skin pants, and like yep. Metallica shirt, I think. And I thought I was this badass, but they definitely wrote it in a different direction right away. Right. And I definitely became that guy that we all truly are. We're the ones that follow the Joey Jeremiahs, and Joey says, hey, let's steal your parents' car. And you're like, no, I don't want to get in trouble. He goes, come on, dude, let's do it. And you go, okay, let's do this.
Yeah. And
he's absolutely this follower. I think that I've got a little bit, I think it's a very common trait. And so it is kind of like a sad character, but also those are the guys that sometimes succeed, because they're the ones. I always felt like Snake was this guy that was always, I felt like he was going to be okay. You know, Joey, you're a little concerned about. Wheels, you're definitely concerned about. But Snake feels like he's got a background that's sort of like, if anything's going to happen, his friends are going to bring him down. But I think that there is something where, for me, I'm coming to the table as a kid. You know what? I knew what my place was in the Zit Remedy. You know, and I knew what my relationship was. And I was 6 foot tall and I, you know, weighing like 150. And, you know,
again, I can relate.
Yeah, exactly.
He still does.
So, yeah, I mean, and listen, it's like, it's been this way because, you know, I played the same character as like a teacher and a principal also.
Right.
And I've never played him like he's a fun guy. Like, I feel like he's always been playing with a little bit of the weight on his shoulders of the world, you know, with that, yeah. Having to make sure that, you know, no one kills themselves at Degrassi, which is a definite possibility.
Well, you know? I thought Mr. Simpson was a fun guy in the Drake video.
Oh, yeah.
buying weed from Jay and Silent Bob.
Yeah, was the most fun. That's the most
non-Snake moment ever.
Yeah. That was Secret Simpson.
Yeah. Amazing. Go back to Dan's point about people suspending their disbelief. It dawns on me as I think about this. When you're walking around in public and people see you with Michelle, do they ever think that you're cheating on Amanda?
No, but I definitely online, I think people have their the reality that they prefer.
Yeah.
But I mean, listen, the truth is, I mean, Michelle and I go out and it's becoming more and more where like I'll be out and they go, oh my God, Snake. And they'll be like, oh my God, you're Michelle Shaughnessy. And like, I'm like, great, I'm still a character.
Yeah.
We were at a llama farm. I think we took her niece to a llama farm a little while ago.
Nice.
Because it felt like a real good socially distant thing to do. Because it was just like, we didn't have to get close to each other.
Who goes to a fucking llama farm? I want to go to the, where's the llama farm? I want to go to the llama
outside
farm.
Outside of Peterborough. And
oh my God.
Like, they told us we were going and we're like, okay. And Michelle was like this. She was so excited for llamas. And
what's that? Wait, do that again. How was she? No, I didn't get it. That was perfect right there.
That's got to be a new gift.
And so they have goats and was it emus? What was it?
Emu are tasty.
Anyway, sorry. I'm just like, anyways, we went there and I was like, as soon as we got out of the car, the woman who runs the place and her kids were flipping out. Cause that's another thing also. It's like, I'm known to two different generations. It's two different things. So the mom is flipping out because I'm Snake. The kids are flipping out because I'm Mr. Simpson.
Right.
And then she's like, oh my God, I can't believe you're here. And then she's like, hi, Michelle Shaughnessy. And then she knew exactly who Michelle was.
That's so amazing.
And that happens more and more, which I really enjoy because I
think. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you're that iconic a character, there's got to be like this sort of almost badge of honor you wear as an actor to go, like, I really not just nailed the role, but the role meant something to so much people that they continue to gravitate towards it like that. Like, listen, you're a real life superhero that, you know, you're Snake.
But listen, I love Degrassi. I think Degrassi has progressed because I was involved for so much of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to watch, and you know, and we would hire people like writers that would really try to do the right story, to do the one that was most honest. And the way they did research, even back then, you know, we would have a read through and the first thing we would do is tell them, we don't believe this, or this is how we talk, or, you know, whatever. And the further you go in, the more they listen to you, you know? Mm. And, you know, we had this this amazing group of writers always that this is like basically a hiring ideas that they know they have to get in and do some research in the schools. They have to do things that are like, figure out our fan base, because, you know, it took a couple of years for us to realize that our trans and audience was quite huge, and to direct and try to figure out how to do that storyline right. Wow. So all the time, I think that this show has meant a lot as far as like being as relatable as possible. And so I've never, listen, I've had my experiences where, you know, I'm walking down the street and a guy will be like, Snake, you suck. You know, like, it's like that happens. But, you know, and then I've had the times where like, I'm at a bar with friends. And this guy, and he's like drunk with a chick, and he's like a Bay Street guy, he's like a bank guy, and he's walking over. I'm like, oh, this is gonna be so bad. And he's like, so you're Snake from Degrassi, aren't you? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, I just want to say that that show saved my life, and I was in a bad place when I was growing up.
Wow.
Get out of my house. And I was like, oh my God. Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Like, and you're just like, so you never know. And that, you know what? That same guy 20 years earlier might've been like, hey, screw you, Snake. But like,
Fight. See, here's the thing. I've never understood that, because we used to get that all the time. We just talked about like the downtown thing in Toronto and Whiskey Saigon, and that's where we worked. And we got a whole lot of that as people were walking backwards, the, hey, so-and-so, you suck. And then they would always end the statement right there. It was like, I suck what? I suck what?
Tid's
what
waiting,
is it?
Tid's waiting for the last for the last noun.
He's up.
What, my fingers after eating cake? Like, I suck what? What the fuck?
Don't suck your fingers.
After eating cake?
Stefan, I wanted to listen. First of all, the llama farm, thank you for the tip. I'm gonna take my little guy there.
That'll be amazing.
For right me. Now, it was so like I didn't think we were gonna have fun. I think we all thought this is gonna be a little lame, and we had such a good time. It was they're very intelligent animals, and you get that feeling right away. You're actually being in a big group of dogs, except they're, you know, it's lambs and llamas. Yeah.
I'm going to give you an insider tip. If you enjoyed the llama farm, here's an insider tip. Take a drive out to Guelph, Ontario, and hit up the Donkey Sanctuary. If you've never been,
Michelle's just like, okay.
It's a Donkey Sanctuary.
It's amazing.
That definitely sounds like something Donnie would like.
It is the single largest collection of jackasses other than this call right now.
I figure that's where I'm going to end up in my retirement home by the sounds of it.
The Donkey Sanctuary.
It's amazing. So I wanted to touch on this. We mentioned just playfully earlier, Jay and Silent Bob.
Yeah.
And Kevin Smith, my personal favorite director. I put that man on a pedestal.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons I do is because I think he has an ear where he so accurately grasps the way people talk and people portray themselves and the way people think. Mm-hmm. And I love that about all of his films. And I think, but maybe no, you have a relationship with him, so I'm curious to know your thoughts. I'm thinking that's part of why he loves Degrassi so passionately.
Well, I mean, you got to think about also, like, when you look at Clerks and how low rent it was, Degrassi. It is, you know, casting in your neighborhood to find, it's smart storytelling and smart dialogue, but you're using what you have around you. And I think that's something that definitely he related to in a big way. You know, he saw that you could tell stories on this level, like, that was, you know, we were lifting, you know, sandbags as we were going, you know, from set to set. We were with the crew because there was only like, it was such a small crew.
Wow.
But I think he saw that. But also I think it's just like, it's one thing to be in just liking the fact that it's like, it's cheap, but it's, the thing about Degrassi is there's no one cool on that show. And the part of us that's not cool, we recognize ourselves in someone on that show. And that's the hardest thing for, I think, a lot of people to realize or recognize or want to admit. And so Kevin is one of those guys that can go like, I totally see myself in these characters. That's the girl I was in love with when I was in high school, because he, you know, loved Caitlin. And it was like, he knew who he was in that show and who he wanted to be friends with. I don't even know if it would have been the Zoo Remedy, but he knew who he wanted to be friends with. And, you know, I mean, I think at that point it becomes like, you know, for Kevin, there's certain things like whether it be comics and Batman or Star Wars. And it becomes, you know, we invited him to be a part of the show. And he was like, hell yeah, because it's so now part of his own personal world. You know, he's got these little pockets of pop culture that he loves. And Degrassi happens to be that one. I mean, he's actually 100% responsible for me directing on Degrassi.
I've heard this story. I love this story. Please tell this story. It's fantastic.
So I had been doing webisodes up until this point on Degrassi. They invited me at one point. I'd been doing some stuff behind cameras. I'm working on some shorts here and there. And then at one point, because they didn't even know what a webisode would be. That's how it was. They're like, the network wants to do these internet shorts. We thought they were going to be on little Nokia phones, you know, so we thought it was just going to be all little heads talking. And that's how we shot them at first. And so I'd done about 80 of them. And then at one point, I did these Halloween ones, you know, where I killed all the cast and they all became zombies.
I mentioned it in my intro, Degrassi of the Dead, my favorite.
So that was probably like 3 or 4 years into doing these webisodes. And the network was like, we love these. We want to show them as a special on Halloween on the network. I was like, I'm in the union. anyway, so I'd had a chance to do a couple episodes at that point. They allowed me to do a couple, a block of episodes. And then Degrassi Goes Hollywood was this 2-hour special that we were going to do. Kevin was going to direct it. And then because you have to have sort of a 10 out of 10 as far as Canadian talent involved, he couldn't do it, but he still wanted to be in it. And so we were on a call with the network, and we were on a call, you know, Kevin and Linda Skyler and Stephen Stone and the writers. And he said, listen, I'll come and do it, but only if Stefan directs. And I started laughing.
Amazing. Like,
that's so good. That's so funny.
What a bro move.
Okay.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah. And they're like, absolutely. No, Stefan, you can. Yeah, he'll direct. And I was like,
they're like, does Stefan direct? Does he
direct? Yeah.
Isn't that the oldest joke though? Right?
Yeah.
No, but what I really want to do is direct. Yeah. here's my biggest question that we've all missed this entire time, right? And because of social media and how we're distancing and everything like that and getting over and everybody knows who you are, have you thought about taking like a little bit of a turn and just referring to yourself as Steph Brogan?
Sure.
Yeah. Just to give him
an extra rub. That's what I'm saying. Just to give him an extra rub.
My Steph. If you guys don't call me Steph by the end of this, that's my how people call Robert De Niro Bobby. Steph.
Not only am I going to call you Steph, I'm going to tell everyone I know that Steph's my friend. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
My teenage fantasies come true.
Whoa.
Shut up. Don't judge me.
Fantasy as a teenager.
Don't judge me.
I'm not projecting.
When I think back to the original shows, Steph, I think that you talk about a show that in a very culturally conservative era was dealing with racism, suicide, teen pregnancy, gun violence, homosexuality, as I mentioned in my intro, in a very homophobic era. Mm-hmm. And all I can think is the world needs more Degrassi on TV today in 2020, because we're a shitstorm. And you know what? There's this need for a voice like that. And I understand, like, you guys have Next Class up on Netflix, which is tremendous, and that's great. I'm not saying like reboot the franchise, which at some point I think it's going to happen anyway. It's like Star Trek, but I think that all of that old content has to be consumable in a more accessible way. And I know a lot of those episodes are on YouTube and that sort of thing, but people may not even know that. Like, I just feel like there's so much content there that is still timely and still relevant right now.
Yeah, there is. But I mean, it comes down to, there's like five subjects teens want to watch. It's like, you know, romance, drugs, suicide. I'm guessing here, but we repeat, you know, if it was acid in the original show, it's Molly now, right? At the same time, you can't tell a kid about, not that I don't know, maybe acid's still hot. But I'd say that, like,
yep, did.
You can't talk to a kid about the birth of AIDS and how they looked, how we looked at it then versus them dealing with, you know, like, even on Next Generation and Next Class, when we were doing Next Generation, we were talking about sexting and a girl who like showed her boobs to a camera and it went on the internet. And by the time we get to Next Class, we're dealing with a whole generation that is sending dick pics.
Yeah.
That are like that. And it is not a bad, like, they don't they don't look at it the same way.
Yeah.
So as much as things change and they stay the same, but you got to relate to whoever you're talking to. Now, listen, I've got
a great point
to go back to the original, but because it's quaint, but it's also like, you know, it was put in stone how the show worked back then. And that's what had to remain. Like, you know, it's so funny to look back I try to think about what storylines were the least well received by like angry parents. I mean, abortion in the States was a huge one, but it wasn't here. The most hate mail we ever got was for our interracial story, which you're shocked. You're kind
that
of
that
like,
was with
like,
with Dio Day.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where you're like, and maybe it's because we're in Toronto, I don't know, or like, but we started getting this mail from across the country. Like, you can't show that on television. We're like, oh my God, that's the one.
Yeah, you know? that's like, the landmine.
That's the one that goes off, you know? So and you realize even the stories that you don't think are important are the ones that are the most important also. Sure. But yeah, listen, I think that it's fun to go back and look, and it's so like guerrilla style.
How
we made it. But I think that every generation has been given their, up until Next Class, their version of Degrassi. And it's gotten prettier as we've gone along.
Right.
And we had more money to do, like have makeup and wardrobe. But it has also been one of those things that it's those those central stories that every teenager goes through, everyone gets their own. Everyone has like, so, you know, you're from the original series. I meet people that are from the Drake era. I meet people that are from the Eli and Claire era. It's like all over the place. But so it is, it's one of those things that, you know, I think comes back to, I think it's quaint. I don't think people are, listen, here's another thing. You know how my brother on the show had to be, he's the one that came out as gay.
Right.
It was too early for us to have a gay character on the show.
Yeah, I was going to ask, was it ever pitched that Snake was gay and they just wimped out and said, let's do a brother?
No, I don't think it was never brought up, but it was the same with Caitlin. Like Caitlin could have lesbian feelings for her teacher, right, but in the end, she wasn't gay. And right, that's actually a big sign of the times that they still weren't really truly ready.
They weren't ready. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's
I know Dan wants to jump in, but before he does, I just want to say, because you mentioned that interracial storyline, I just rewatched that episode the other day, Black and White. Mm-hmm. And you said a moment ago, no one on Degrassi was cool. BLT was fucking cool. I remember watching Dio a Day back in the day and thinking, this kid's a star. This kid is a fucking star.
I just talked to Dio maybe a month ago. He called me and he's a very creative guy, lives in Los Angeles. And he was like, he had a show idea that he wanted to talk to me about. We've been like spitballing it back and forth. And so he's that guy. And I also, he was on the LA Complex, which I directed.
Yeah.
So I've worked with him through the years in different ways, shapes and forms. But yeah, like Dio is just cool. Like he's just cool. And he's actually very inspiring. Like I gotta call him back. Cause like, he's good ideas. I mean, how can you hate BLT?
Sir, Dan, jump on.
Steph?
Yeah.
Steph.
Oh, shit. I want to get it to another level.
Yeah, we're taking... Well, this is the thing. I wanted to circle back to an acting question, because as Donnie talked about in the intro, bringing you on the show today, your character experienced a lot of different levels of emotions and dealt with a lot of heavy shit. And I was just curious to know, what was the hardest scene? Is there something that stands out to you, even if it's not on Degrassi, as an actor, maybe some of the hardest material you've had to work with, and how deep did you have to go to perform that? Because I know that's not easy.
Now, first of all, guys, are you asking because you have an acting career
yes.
And does.
So
yeah.
You don't tell me if you don't get excited when you read your character has to deal with some heavy shit.
Yeah, well, I haven't had the opportunity to play that heavy a role yet. So this is almost in anticipation. I mean, in acting classes, I've had some serious exercises that have taken me to places I didn't think I could get. And I'm still wondering how well I could do this in an audition or on camera, and wondering what you have done to get there.
Let me put it this way, first of all. In all versions of Degrassi, the kids are, it's messed up. If it's a rape story, they want that storyline. If they're like out, you want the heavy. You don't want to just be doing the episodes where you're like, man, I failed another test.
Yeah.
Like you want to be able to dig your teeth into
something. Nobody's watching it. Nobody's watching those I failed another test story. Everybody's watching. You know what I mean? But everybody, like, you give, if I've got this heavy role, man, people are going to be paying attention to me as a performer.
Sure. Yeah. And it also gives you something to do. I mean, this actress on the new show, Amanda, who played, I'm forgetting her character's name right now, she's got pink hair. And she played Lola.
You got Alexa going?
I call it Michelle.
What's the weather?
She didn't want, so she was good on the show, but I think we almost hired her because she was so cute. And we gave her an exceptionally heavy abortion story where she finds that she's pregnant and she goes and has the abortion that day and comes back and she doesn't regret it. And everyone wants her to feel bad. And she's like, I don't feel bad.
Right.
This was like I was saying, different generations.
Yeah,
totally. Tell a story about the girl that's not like going, hi, hi.
We find the girl. She's not ashamed. Right.
She's like, this was right for me. Right. I had to do it. And talk about a girl that I watched push herself so hard and make such a big, not improvement, because it was probably always there, right. but she put it all on the table in ways that I was like shocked. Right. And and I think that comes from like, when you're given that opportunity, you don't want to mess it up.
Right.
Now, as far as I'm concerned, I think there's been two things that I've been like, I wish hadn't been sprung me. I did a show once where I was a professor, it was called Witchblade, and I turned out to be the murderer, but she has these flashbacks because she's magic. And
I don't have to watch that now.
Yeah. And I'm the murderer. And so then we just have to shoot. But he's also a rapist.
And oh, well, now I have to watch this. Jesus Christ, Steph.
And I just remember being really like, they're like, now take your shirt off and get on top of her. And I was like, and we never talked about this. Like, and it doesn't say anything about him. Like, if anything, it's just like a close up of my face, like being like, and I remember like that being like throwing me off and having to go into the place where I'm like talking to the girl, like, are you cool with this? She's like, I'm fine.
Right.
Both of us were a little shocked. And where that's like, that's a thing where you're like, hey, you can't just throw people into this crap. Like, you kind of have to give them some like,
bit of a heads up.
Yeah, heads up. I think the part.
What's the heads up? So we're doing a rape scene today, ladies and gentlemen.
Rape scene is one thing, but tell me how you're going to shoot it. Because if I'm getting on top of a girl, which I was like, hey, isn't this network television? Like, okay. And you want me to take my shirt off? I worked out. And it's like, I was thinking, like, I would have liked to know the what was going on before.
Yeah.
As far as like, I've had times where you try, and as a young actor, you think you're ready. I remember, like, I find Claude's body, who commits suicide on Degrassi High, and I had to come running into the principal's office and say I found the body, and I really wanted to be tearing up. I couldn't do it.
Right.
And I ran to craft services, and I grabbed onion, and I smashed it in my eyes.
Is that right?
Just enough of a little bit of a water. And you're like, amazing. And this is one of the things you always pride yourself on, my man, I can cry whenever I need to. I can just do it. And
right.
You're in that moment, the stress is there, or your head is somewhere else and you just can't do it. And I just remember being so disappointed in myself because you want to have that moment. Mm. Listen, all I'm going to say is that you're going to find yourself more emotionally connected to an audition where you're like, oh, this guy is messed up. Mm. I want to these characters. I think it's so much more interesting than playing the leading man in a lot of ways. Right. I think that it's a lot more fun to play those characters that are either villains or hiding something or are broken, which could be a leading man character.
Mm-hmm. Big challenge for yourself.
Yeah.
A challenge, but it's the best part of acting.
It's the bread and butter,
If it's a comedic scene, you don't want to be the straight guy. You want to be the guy that gets the laughs. So
that's not easy either. A lot of times.
No, not at all. Yeah. So like, it is one of those things that you all I know is that if you get into
that acting, here,
it's not because you just want to be like, hey, you want the shit.
For sure.
Yeah. Why isn't it my fucking world, Steph? Welcome to my world.
Why would I just look into his face? I start laughing. What an asshole.
See, here we are.
Steph, I wanted to ask you, I'm wondering if there's a parallel here. I have been coaching basketball from ages 6 to 21 for the last 23 years. I coach kids that have gone on to play professionally, play in the NBA. Yeah. Women that have gone on to play professionally and played overseas. Mm-hmm. I've been doing this a long, long time. When I first started as a coach, I really struggled because I was a big kid as a player. I was a center, and working with the big kids as a coach came easy to me. Working with the guards, it took a lot more time for me to develop that muscle. And it took a lot more time for me to develop that skill set in terms of how does a point guard need to think? How does a shooting guard need to operate? Because I've never been those things. Mm-hmm. As a child actor turned director, I'm wondering if you ever found, I don't know how to fucking direct this particular type of character because I'm not in the headspace of that individual.
Well, I'm a big proponent in talking to young actors and finding out what they think. And how they're like, and going like, I've had guys that have gone, like, I was dealing with this young actor, he's a young Black actor. And he's like, I don't know how to do this because young Black men don't cry. Hmm. And I was like, oh, okay, well, you gotta cry. It says it in the script, you have to cry. And he's like, and we had long conversations about what would bring his character that thing. Right. And he's like, he was disappointed in himself. He's like, I wanna do the right thing. So I think most of all, I think if there's communication, it's very easy to become a traffic cop and tell people what you think and go, now do it. And sometimes you can do that because an actor is so capable or has just been around enough that they can do that and they bring this amazing thing. But it's so important to have those conversations. Like we always rehearsal on Degrassi. So we always have that chance to figure it out before we get to set. So the kid's not like going like, I don't know how to get there. We talk about those things, you get it out of the way. I've always told them, it's like, and this is the way we've always had to address it, is like, they're kids, but they're professionals. And so if you treat them like that, they're going to find what they need to do. They're going to find the place to go. And it's like, it is one of those things that they want to be brave, and they want to ask questions, but you can also go like this after a while. And they're on camera like, okay, one more time. And they get that, you know?
Yeah.
I start off with kids that come in with like Disney experience. And they're just like, hello. And you start telling them, it's like, do it like a documentary. They're like, oh, okay. And they get it. They know the change, right? They get how it's going to be a different kind of performance. And I think actors in general just need conversation. I think they need to know that there's someone on the other side that's looking out for their best interest. And it's like, whether you go into an audition or whatever, you got to know that like someone's on your side, right?
Steph, before we wrap up, we do have some questions that have been accumulating in our chat room on Facebook. So I want to throw at you a few of these fan expo type panel questions.
Sure.
Feel free to give it a one word answer, a one sentence answer, and let's just rapid fire as many of these as we can in the next 2 minutes.
Okay.
What were the original plans for Tori before she left? It seemed like Zoe was brought in to fill the void of her leaving.
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know the actual.
That's a good answer.
Yeah.
I actually don't. I think that I don't actually know the story. And I wish I actually had more information about that, because it was one of those things. And I don't know if sometimes, because the cast is so big, the writers get different ideas. And then they move on to a different character completely than they have. And they go, it has nothing to do with the actor, it has to do with the stories that they can figure out if they're like, are they trudging up old storylines that we've already done? Like, this new character to bring a new aspect. I wish I had a better answer for that, because I truly don't remember.
Yeah, that's fine.
And nor was I probably involved in those conversations. Yeah. Sorry.
What was the story with Chester? He showed up for 2 episodes and was never seen again.
Listen, we have a lot of young dudes and young ladies that show up for 2 episodes, and then suddenly our fan base is like, what's happened to Chester? Chester was awesome. It's like, no, Chester served his purpose. Chester got the girl pregnant and then never saw her again. No, I mean, like, yes, we have, no, that's not actually what happened with Chester, but Chester, I think it's one of those things that, what are you going to do? You're going to have, sometimes you don't want it to be one of your main characters that's involved with one of your leads, you know? So you bring in a supporting character to cover that, you know? So, Chester, but I've met that actor several times. He's a fantastic actor.
I think they call that a stunt cock.
That's exactly what we called it on set.
I'm gonna skip some of these other Degrassi questions, because there's a question here that keeps coming up.
Okay.
What's up with the Michelle Ring story that she told when she was on the show? So when Michelle was on the show, she talked about how she got a ring.
Oh, that's right.
And then she made you get her a better ring or something to that effect. I don't know if you want to bring
that.
No, but you said, I don't know if you like it. If you don't, it's fine. You can return it. So I said, fine.
Yo, your Alexa is going off, bro. You got to unplug that.
So I did tell her. First of all, I did it at like the last minute before I got on a plane to see her in Winnipeg. And I couldn't find anything. And also, okay, this is the worst. But anyways, my mom's wedding ring is gold with a pearl. And it was a little different. It's a little dated. And I found this antique ring that was sort of set up the same way. And that's when I was like, only when I was on the plane, I'm like, I think I got the wrong ring. I think in my mind, it was something else. I told her and I warned her. I said, I got you something. And I think she knew it was coming. I said, if you don't like it, we can. And I told her, I can't remember if I actually showed it to you, Michelle, or if you just went, let's go look for a ring.
Did you mean it? Or were you like, I hope she likes it for real.
I kind of knew I made a mistake when I was on the plane.
Oh, okay.
And it was kind of like a little neighborhood place. And I found this, I thought like antique ring, she'll love it. And Michelle's like, I want some bling.
So, so you used a pearl instead of a diamond.
Yes.
Where the hell? That was in my house. What the hell just happened there?
Hey man, you still got the girl.
All right. But
I made up for it.
The you did the, yeah, you did the smart thing. You did the smart thing, brother. Good on you.
We fixed the problem, you know? Right? And then we got the new ring and we got this ring and we had it made. And then I got down on one knee and I proposed. I think she leaves that out, by the way. So
you old honey dripper. Listen, Steph,
wow, amazing.
Where can fans get in touch with you on socials and everything that you've got out there?
I am on Twitter and Instagram at Stefan Brogren. Just that's it. I'm verified.
Perfect. You got the blue check. I know we spent so much time on Degrassi. We didn't get a chance to talk about your new projects that you're doing, Holly Hobby and things like that, which I'm really interested to talk about.
It's all on hold, dude. It's like, you know,
everything, the whole world's on hold. The whole world's on hold. But you know what? At some point down the road, man, we'd love to have you back on. You're an awesome guest and we really enjoyed the time.
Thanks. I'll come back anytime. You guys are great.
Amazing. And
how's tomorrow?
when you and Michelle go to the donkey sanctuary, let me know. I'll be there.
Oh, okay. It's group trip.
Yeah. Okay. All right, man. Steph Brogren.
Steph, by the way.
Steph Brogren.
Steph Brogren. Baby.
Thank you so much. And we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, all right, thank you, man.
There he goes, ladies and gentlemen. My make-believe high school best friend, Snake Simpson.
Man,
is now my pal, Steph.
Was this your biggest markout moment on GOP history?
It seemed like it. GOP history? For him, yes. Absolutely, yeah. It was.
Pretty good.
He don't even got to answer it. He's still wiping off the inner side of his leg right now. I'll answer it for him. He completely, like, put Peter North in his jeans. Like, no doubt about
it. Did you just make Peter North a verb?
Wow.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Gentlemen, parting thoughts before we say goodnight, because we are overtime.
Oh, man. I somehow got to use the wiping the inner thigh. That's funny. I got to use that on someone soon. That's going in the bomber's chat at some point. That's the new cream your jeans, man.
Wipe your inner thigh? You going to put that in a song?
Oh, that shit's funny, man.
Parting thoughts?
I want 20% if that ends up in a song.
Okay, fair enough. I probably owe you.
It's probably, I mean, 20% of nothing is nothing. But anyways, but I want a CD at least,
I have
bro,
no problem
and a T-shirt.
Speaking of T-shirts, best, go to godfathersofpodcasting.com/shop. Buy your T-shirts, buy your hats, buy all your merchandise. Go there. Go to makegoodfood.ca and enter promo code GOP45 to get $45 off each of your first two orders. Do it. Do it now. And thank you so much to everyone for joining us. This is episode 24. We are done. Amazing. This party. And do not forget, on behalf of my bro Danny O and Notorious T.I.D. Chris Tidwell,
Deuce.
We have been podcasting since before podcasting was even called podcasting, and we will continue to do it as long as we damn well please. My name is Donnie DeSilva. We'll see you next time.
Deuce.
Hey yo, Skiz. Man, they still saying these kids out here don't respect lyricism, bro. I still find it kind of funny, cause I hear Lil Molina say,
my dad makes rhymes.
Emily.
My dad makes beats.
Rap, potent, intact, potent.
poetry, slapped with overly stacked doses of actual potpourri. I'm fresh groceries, crass when I boastfully mash up and toast and cheese, like I always got rum and coke with me. The Julian of raps, trailer park, come with crazy talk, and I'ma spray your block, make a Jehovah Witness spray to knock. Nothing can save your squad, not even Noah's famous dark. Run lyrically, rappers literally want me paid to walk. Well, crowdfunded, I'm full like a round stomach, a versus a pound plummet and pummel you clowns. Dummies keep mumbling, wow, wow. It pulmonary valve pumping these rats till the cows come in they house from out in public. Even without the ice and the cream like Haagen-Dazs, I'd fit nicely on a team with Big Pac and Nas. Lawyers couldn't pass these bars on a level with these awesome guards. The world's greatest bootlegger couldn't knock me off.
Emily,
little Melina say,
Emily.
I hit like Mike Socia's my coach in his lineup. I'm fourth level of ill where it's instilled that I double my dosage. Multiple sclerosis, sick is how to expose it. I see food like Nova Scotians when rappers approach this. Practically piggish how I rap the sickest. Calling Kaepernick is warning words because I will serve as bad for that. But take it, you cats are livid. I'll make you a fast statistic. With rap, I'm sadistic. Make you my fucking basket of lipstick. I'm still a Ginsu. Quick to slice you into a fist do. Not a Hindu, but I can give you rhymes until my skin's blue and make you call me a god. But I ain't Vishnu. I'm dudes off. See, they too soft, they waste tissue. Read the signs, I'm invading this planet with madness. Eating all beings, I'm competing with Hannibal's antics. Miss my name when you're planning your battling tactics. Cause Dan is nuts, you better not be anaphylactic.
Daddy,
on some stupid stoop, like if you YouTube the clip of me jumping off a roof, a flip to prove I'm hip. You dudes can chew it. No duplicate of my pool of spit. It's true, your shit go missing like Flight 370. Google it, I'm hot, terrific. His squad simplistic. Dropped in an instant like you lost an engine while I'm driven like a Honda Civic. To rhyme harder than quantum physics, I've gone ballistic. Taking it to that point like a sentence that got specific. My scripts are cold and with more than a DC vintage poster. MCs have been roasting the lead, I fiendishly click the folder. Even if the industry gives me the freezing shoulder, I'm always seeing you, I'm a season ticket holder. Ah, Dan's a legend, I'm practically rap's Rich Pryor. Bring the ruckus like I just discovered your hit wire. I wrap circles around you like your rims tire. Always unemployed, I can't tell you how long I've been fired.